Hello and welcome to Liverpool Life's podcast. I'm Lewis Meller and I will be discussing this week's main news stories as well as your sports headlines and what's on in Liverpool Guide. Coming up in this week's show, we will be speaking to Sarah Langley from Murray Communication Limited and Alice Owen, Corporate Communications Manager at Merseyrail, to find out how the Liverpool Giants Spectacular in July helped to attract 1 million people to the city and boost the economy by £46 million.
As a council, we invested £300,000 in this event, and as a result, we generated £46 million in the economy.
We will also take a look at the chaos Hurricane Gonzalo caused on Merseyside. And are the main political parties doing enough to tackle child poverty? We will be hearing from John Tong, Professor of Politics at Liverpool University, about the comments made by former Labour Cabinet Minister Alan Milbourne.
So the poorest are getting poorer, the wealthiest are getting wealthier, and that's not a situation which can lead to a harmonious Britain.
But first, let's hear about that fantastic story about the Liverpool Giants generating £46 million for the Merseyside economy and attracting over 1 million people to the city. Between the 23rd and 25th of July this year, the Royal Deluxe Street Puppets came to the city as part of the World War I centenary. Jake Cotchell spoke to Sarah Langley, who carried out research on the Murray Consultancy Limited, and asked her about the significance of the report.
Reports of this are really important because at the end of the day we're council taxpayers' money, so this is public money we're using to put on cultural events. So members of the public, although they can see this fantastic piece of street theatre taking place in front of them, you know, they're essentially that they're funding this as well. So it's good to be able to say, look, we as a council we invested £300,000 in this event, and as a result we generated £46 million in the economy. It's like 150% investment on that figure. So I think it's really important that people see the events and why we continue to put the cultural events on in this city.
Jake also spoke to Alice Owen, Corporate Communications Manager at Merseyrail, about the scale of the event and the impact it had on transport in Liverpool.
Just tell me a little bit about what the Giants coming to Liverpool meant for Merseyrail.
Well, it meant quite a lot to us, actually. You're probably aware that the main way to get into town over those days was actually by train, because cars and buses weren't allowed directly into the city centre. So that meant for many local people, they were coming in on our services. What we found out after a few days when we were able to analyse our research is that we had hundreds of thousands of extra passengers over those days. We estimate that we had around about 500,000 extra passenger journeys over the course of 3 days.
How did you cope with that? Was it any difficulties at all?
Well, it certainly was, shall we say, a challenging thing to do. It wasn't easy. And all our timetable over those days was geared towards this event, towards getting people into town in the morning and back home in the evening. So it was, quite an effort on our part, with extra staff deployed, train services strengthened, which means that we had more trains on and that we made trains longer. We've got 59 trains and all of them were in service.
Did you make a lot of money from it?
Well, obviously we had lots of extra passengers, but you need to bear in mind that we're a metropolitan network. We're geared towards getting people into town for work and jobs and to go shopping and go to the theatre and so on. We're not really geared towards that kind of event. So yes, we did have more passengers over those days, but as a metropolitan service, we're not really geared up to the events on that scale.
It is probably the most talked about subject this week around the country as Hurricane Gonzalo caused chaos throughout the UK, including Merseyside. The storm battled the city on Tuesday, causing the Birkenhead Tunnel and roads to shut as 70-mile-an-hour winds swept across Liverpool. Commuters had a chaotic journey to and from work as traffic came to a halt as a result of collapsing trees and debris swirling around the streets. Trains are also delayed and cancelled, and the high winds sent metal panels flying off the 17th floor of the Unity building in Chapel Street. Roads have now reopened, but a major clear-up operation is still ongoing, with emergency services and council workers working around the clock to clear up all the remaining debris. Now this will be a story that will interest many of you, as the government has set out plans to imprison people caught sending abusive messages via social medias. This week, Garen Howell was jailed for 4 weeks for sending anti-Semitic tweets to the Wavertree MP, Luciana Berger. Reporter Dan O'Brien took to the streets of Liverpool to see whether the public thought the new laws would act as a deterrent.
Under the new law, people found writing abusive or offensive messages on the sites could face a maximum of 2 years in jail. The plan set out by Justice Secretary Chris Grayling will cut down on the practice known as trolling. I went out on the streets of Liverpool to ask people if they thought the new law would act as a deterrent.
I think it's ridiculous, really. I mean, what ever happened to freedom of speech? I mean, you know, you're insulting people on Twitter, but you can insult people in real life and it doesn't really mean anything. But if it's a problem, just get off the media, get off Twitter. You know, you should be, you know, I think social media is such a big thing now and it just can be abused really easily.
There are genuine people who have some kind of hate against some other people, who may not even be aware about this 2 whole years in jail. So possibly, I think, it can act as a deterrent for some people.
So I think it would, but I think it's a bit harsh to actually get people to that point where they have to spend 2 years in, because I think generally, once you've just been caught out and questioned by the police, maybe I think that's enough of a deterrent in itself, to be honest.
The planned laws come days after Judy Finnegan's daughter, Chloe Madeley, received death threats via the social media platform. Dan O'Brien reporting for Liverpool Life.
For more on all the latest news, sport, entertainment, views and reviews, follow us on Twitter at JMU Journalism and come back often.
Now, child poverty is something that no one likes to hear about, but according to a new report by the Social Mobility and Child Poverty Commission, the UK risks becoming a permanently divided society unless radical new approaches are taken by the next government. This week, Social Mobility Chief Ellen Milbourne has blasted all three main political parties over their failure to combat poverty. John Tong, Professor of Politics at Liverpool University, agrees with the report and spoke to our reporter Ruby Molyneux.
Wealth gap has increased in Britain in recent years, and child poverty in particular remains one of the worst problems we have compared to any other country in Western Europe. And so Alan Milburn's commission has made an important contribution to the debate. You know, he's come up with some very firm proposals as to what we should do as a country to address the issue of child poverty in particular.
Do you think that main parties need to do better for social mobility?
Yeah, none of the main parties are doing very well on social mobility. If you look at social mobility in Britain, it's actually decreased in recent years, which bucks the trend elsewhere in Western Europe. So in other words, what you've got are an elite in Britain who are getting wealthier and have more power and wealth concentrated amongst them. And at the bottom, you've actually had an increase in poverty. So the poorest are getting poorer. The wealthiest are getting wealthier. And that's not a situation which can lead to a harmonious Britain. What matters now is whether Alan Milburn's report will be simply ignored by the parties who think it's unrealistic in a period of austerity, or whether the political parties will say, OK, this is an important cross-party report. It's not a party political report. Let's see what we can do about this. Because the report is actually very clearly written, which is good news, and it also offers some very clear proposals. My criticism of the report is it does read a bit like a wish list at a time when, you know, frankly, the country doesn't have much money to play with.
He also said that Ed Miliband raising the minimum wage to £8 an hour will make people worse off. Do you agree?
I don't agree that raising the minimum wage to £8 will make people worse off. I don't see how raising a wage can make people worse off, especially as people won't be paying tax on that minimum wage anymore. I think the coalition has done some good things to the lowest paid. It's in the middle where the coalition has done more harmful things. What Alan Milburn calls for in his report, though, is the concept of a living wage. So he wants substantial increases in the wages of those at the bottom. A living wage is more important, he argues, than a minimum wage. And I like that approach. But of course, you've got businesses saying we can't afford to pay more than the minimum wage. And Alan Milburn doesn't really deal with that problem, that if you set a minimum wage, businesses will tend to head towards that minimum wage. So that's the problem that's not really addressed in the report.
Why should they listen to his report?
Well, all parties say they want to increase well-being in the country, and you can't have a country without social problems if you've got an underclass that is living in poverty. That will increase the amount of crime. That will increase the amount of deviancy. That will increase the amount of unrest. If we don't address the problems that Alan Milburn has highlighted, then we're a country which frankly looks backward compared to our economic competitors. Which economy has ever got better in the world by having lots of poor people at the bottom? The fact is, what we need is growth for all. If we are having an economic recovery, as George Osborne claims, then we've got to make it a recovery for all. That way you'll get better standards in schools, you'll get better houses, you'll get more educational attainment, and you will get people better off generally and have a greater sense of social unity. If you don't have those things, then Britain will remain a highly divided society, and those at the bottom will stay at the bottom.
That was Ruby Molyneux reporting for Liverpool Life. That story is certainly one that I'm sure many of you will be keeping an eye out on from now until the general election in May 2015. NHS radiographers went on strike across Merseyside hospitals on Monday as part of a national strike over pay. Members of the Society of Radiographers are unhappy at the government's continued refusal to accept a suggested 1% pay rise for all staff. The action is the Society's first UK-wide strike for more than 30 years. This strike followed action took last week by thousands of NHS nurses and midwives. Members of the Society are outside the Royal Liverpool Hospital on Monday.
The main reason why we're striking is because over the last 4 years we've had a 15% decrease in our wages.
I guess for the government to kind of take notice that inflation really does affect us in terms, and it's not just us as staff, it's staff across the board. Everybody is being affected. There's some people in the NHS at the moment who are having to work two jobs just to be able to maintain cost of living. Hopefully all standing together and doing something will achieve something.
Professor Sid Watkins, a top Liverpool surgeon who was much loved in Merseyside and throughout the Formula One community, has this week been honoured by Walton Hospital and has named its new building after him. Professor Watkins, who sadly passed away in September 2012, was at the forefront of safety on the Formula One track for more than 30 years. The Walton Centre's new three-storey building will house training facilities and a rehabilitation unit. The building, which will open in January, will also contain a brain injuries unit, which will be run by the Mental Health Trust Mersey Care. Caroline Kenyon, Head of Communications for the hospital, says that Mr. Watkins always put safety first.
What did Professor Watkins do for Formula One to make this happen?
Professor Watkins, he worked with Sir Jackie Stewart OBE, who was the first one to start working on improving safety on racetracks with Formula One. Bernie Eccleston brought in Sid Watkins, who was a neurosurgeon working in London at the time, because there were too many deaths and serious injuries on Formula One tracks. And what he did was he transformed the medical facilities of every Formula One track around the circuit. So basically, before his intervention, whether you had a first aider with good medical facilities there or not was a matter of luck. But with Professor Watkins' intervention, he would only let a race go ahead if it had the full medical station there with experienced doctors and nurses, with all the equipment they needed, so that if ever there was an accident, they'd be right onto it and to save that driver's life. That was one side of it. But he also worked with Jackie Stewart to make sure that when a driver's in the driving cockpit of his car, he's got a frame around him, he's got a particular helmet, the car's designed in a particular way, so he's got more chance of surviving the accident. So in a nutshell, that's basically what he did.
Head injuries have been at the forefront of many sports in the last few weeks, including Formula One, with Marussia driver Jules Bianchi in a critical condition after he crashed into a recovery vehicle at the Japanese Grand Prix.
For more on all the latest news, sport, entertainment, views and reviews, bookmark jmu-journalism.org.uk.
Now here's Luke Holliday with the weekly roundup of sports, including the recent developments at Tranmere Rovers.
With Mickey Adams officially starting his role as the new manager, his first move has been to sign Chesterfield striker Armand Nadjeli on a short-term loan of 1 month. In terms of outgoings, Chief Executive Jeremy Butler has left the club after only 7 months in the job. In a statement on the club's website, he thanked Peter Johnson for the opportunity to work at the club and said he felt that he was leaving Tranmere in good hands. Meanwhile, Liverpool manager Brendan Rodgers insists he has no issue with England manager Roy Hodgson following his recent comments about Raheem Sterling. The winger started in Liverpool's 3-2 Premier League win over QPR, having been left out of England's last Euro 2016 qualifier after complaining of tiredness. Hodgson has been criticised for making that conversation public. In rugby league, Super League champion St Helens have appointed Kieran Cunningham as their new head coach. The 37-year-old Saints player has been a coach at the club since he retired 4 years ago. He replaces Nathan Brown, who stepped down to return to Australia.
On Wednesday night, we witnessed a masterclass in football after Real Madrid eased their way to a 3-0 victory at Anfield. Here's what Luke had to say about the result.
I think the fact that Liverpool came into the game with no sort of form, you know, the team wasn't playing very well. I know they got the victory over QPR, but they've not hit the heights of last season. And I think that made it hard for them to get going in the game. I think the high pressing we associated with them last year wasn't there in this game and hasn't really been there all season. And I think they're going to struggle unless they can work that back into the game. Madrid controlled possession really with Modric and Cruz in the middle, and once they got the early goals, I think they found it easy just to be able to hit on the counter with the sort of pace they've got in the team with Ronaldo, Isco, Benzema, and by the end it could have been a lot worse really. I mean, it could have been 6 or 7 with the chances Madrid were creating.
What did you make of Balotelli swapping shirts with Pepe at half time?
Well, there's a coming from a Liverpool fan's perspective, I wouldn't imagine it's what you'd want to see, especially in a massive game like it was Liverpool's big return to the Champions League against arguably the biggest club in the world. And especially down to the fact that really he hadn't put in a performance on in the first half and he hasn't really put in a good performance all season. And it's really sort of, it's really looking like there might be a poor acquisition for Liverpool. And it's not really worked, and the $16 million that at the time looked like a good deal.
Thank you very much, Luke. That was Luke Holliday reporting on last night's game at Anfield. And now it's time to let you know what will be happening in Liverpool in the next week. And what better way to start than at the Irish Festival, which is celebrating the culture and history linking our city with Ireland. Over 60 events are taking place throughout the city up until the 2nd of November, with local theatre companies and the Museum of Liverpool hosting some of the events. It will be your last chance to see the Full Monty at the Liverpool Empire Theatre on Saturday, so if you loved the 1997 hit British film about steelworkers turned strippers, then make sure you get your tickets at just £10 each. And if that's not enough for you theatre-goers, then you can also watch Bright Phoenix at Liverpool Everyman Theatre up until Saturday night. You can get tickets for the Jeff Young's epic and poetic play between £10 and £20. If you're into your comedy, then on Friday you can see a whole host of laughter with comedians playing The Slaughterhouse and Blue Bar on the Albert Dock. In sports, Liverpool take on Hull City at 3 o'clock on Saturday at Anfield, looking to get over their defeat to Real Madrid in the Champions League, whilst Everton travel to Burnley on Sunday. Meanwhile, League Two strugglers Tranmere Rovers face a tough trip away to AFC Wimbledon. And there's more for you sports fans, as the Magnificent Seven fight again at the Echo Arena on Saturday, the 25th of October, with ticket prices varying between £160 to £44. That's all for the Liverpool Life podcast this week. I've been Lewis Mellor. Thanks for listening.
This has been the Liverpool Life, Liverpool Lives podcast. Brought to you by the journalism students at the Redmond's News Centre. More next week.